If nothing changes, then nothing changes. If nothing changes, then nothing changes. Einstein used to say insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. That's just crazy. So if we want to do something different, that's called change, then we've got to do something different, because if nothing changes, then nothing changes. So let's start to explore, how do we do things differently? As we look at this constant called change, we first must start with the thing that is to be changed. The thing that is to be changed is us. And you and I, us, are people. And we also need to understand that we are a triune creature. So we can change. We can change what we do with our body, because it's a machine. It's our temporary dwelling place. We can choose to change what we do with our brain, our mind, because we're in control of it. And we can choose changes at the level called spirit, because we are not our body. It's carbon-based life form. We are not our brains, carbon-based life form. We are the spirit that occupies that body, then we call it a soul, and that runs that brain, then that we would call that the mind. We got to know that when I say if nothing changes, nothing changes. Conversely, if something changes, everything changes. Change has to have a beginning. And I'm all about change. And I believe we want to change our world, we first must change our thinking. So many things are a product or a byproduct of our thinking. The old saying is energy follows thought. Well, nowadays, it's not an old saying, it's scientifically backed up, that our thoughts create photons, energy. When we start challenging our self-talk and questioning our belief systems, we are now at the structural level of our experience here on this planet, in this temporary dwelling place made of flesh. And here's the thing I want you to get, is we have more control than we realize. We are not at effect. We are at cause. We have a lot more control of what's going on in our experience than we realize. And once we understand that, then we do something about it. You know, we change. We change from victim to victor. We change from focusing on what was done to us and what we do in us. And as we are going to discuss today, change can take place on many levels. Matter of fact, we're going to cover today again, there are six logical levels. And then there are a multitude of levels of change, you know, changing your attitude, changing your state of mind, changing the way you remember something, how you codified your experience into a memory, changing the frame, the narrative, changing your God, changing your future. We all have the ability to start anew at any time we want. See, unlike you, I have not always been as good, as noble, and as righteous as I work to be today. I would love to go back in time and fix some things in my past. You know, I've done a lot of great things, but I've also done some things that I'm not proud of. I've not always treated people the best. I've not always represented myself well. I have not always walked with God at the same level that I am today. I hate to say this, but I have not always represented the God whom I love well. I have made mistakes. I have fallen short of the glory of God. I have messed up at times in my past. I do not have a DeLorean. I do not have a crazy scientist as a friend, and I cannot go back to the future. Neither can you or Michael J. Fox. But what we all have the power to do is draw that big line in the sand, that big up until now, and it is the ultimate reframe. Remember, if nothing changes, then nothing changes. I want you to be aware of all the levels and simplicity of some change. And when you change one part of a system, you change the whole system. Understanding that we have the power. We have the power to change. It is a beginning step in the process. Between the stimulus and the response, there is a space. And in that space is our power. It is our freedom. At wayofwarrior.training, I want to give you back your power, your freedom. And one of the ways we can do the change is we can reframe. Reframing is about change, changing the way we look back at something, how we remember. I'm going to tell you right now, it really doesn't matter what happens to us in life. What matters is how do we codify it? What matters is how do we explain it to ourselves? What matters is how we remember. You know the term remember. Re means to do again. So what does the word remember mean? Remember, you know, Mr. Taterhead? Remember him? Every time you took off his arms and legs, you dismembered him. And every time you put back his arms and legs, you put them back on him, you remembered him. To remember something is to put it back together. That's what PTSD is. That's what some traumas are. That's what triggers are. We have codified things as a way to remember them, and they are codified as traumatic. And so we can't change the past, but we can change the frame we put around something. We can reframe. We have that power. To reframe something is to change the way something's expressed or considered. It really means to frame again, to re-describe. Notice I didn't say describe. It's already been described once. To re-describe the narrative from a different perspective, to re-label. Think about it. When I used to collect art when I was younger, and first thing I do when I get a piece of art is I would take it to an art framer company who framed it, and they would, I wouldn't tell them anything, they would take the picture and frame it in a way that made the picture pop. And it never felt that every time I got that picture back, it had a new matting, a new frame. And you know what I got back? I got back a brand new picture. Because when we change the frame, we change the matting, we change our perception, we change what the eye was drawn to. I had one picture that the framing itself, when I got it framed, there was a tree in the picture that eagle was on. And they actually made the frame that it was an extension of the tree and actually looked like branches. And so when you put a different frame around something, your eyes are drawn. It's a different perception. It looks differently. And that's the same thing in our psychological world. Reframing is a technique used in therapy to help create a different way of looking at a situation, person, or relationship. And thus, ready for this? Thus changing its meaning. It's also referred to as cognitive reframing or restructuring. It's a strategy therapists often use to help clients look at situation from a slightly different perspective. The idea behind reframing is that a person's point of view depends on the frame it is viewed in. The other day, I got my hair cut. I finished getting my hair cut, was sitting in the parking lot, my car running, ready to back up, but I was on the phone doing some therapy. After about 15 minutes doing that, I realized, oh my gosh, it's Valentine's Day. It's 11 o'clock in the morning. I got to get home. My wife hasn't seen me yet today. So I start backing up, and a postman's behind me. Postman pulls up and parks right behind me. Now, there's five other open lanes right around me. I'm in a place where there's probably eight parking spots, and there's me and one other car. So this post guy could park anywhere. So I'm back up. He pulls up, stops behind me. I honk and wave at him. He stops, looks at me, doesn't say a word to me, and gets out, walks by me, and goes inside the business to deliver mail. So I'm like, how rude. So he comes out, and I honk at him, say, dude, I'm backing up. Could you move your vehicle? He looks at me, doesn't say a word, and he goes to the business next to him. Now, I'm getting mad. I got to get going. This guy hasn't even acknowledged me. He looks at me like I'm a ghost, and he doesn't say a word. So he finally comes back with mail on. Looks like he's going another place, and I'm getting mad now. I said, dude, I'm backing up. You could park anywhere, right there or here. I mean, how rude. I mean, you're not even saying anything to me. And he gets in his thing and drives away. Doesn't say, never said a word to me. As I'm now, he's driving away, out from in front of me from a business. I don't know who this guy is. I've never been in this business. This guy comes out screaming at me belligerently and telling me what a piece of crap I am, swearing at me, diving at me. And I'm telling him, you know, who are you? Get out of it, you know. And he dives on my car, is pounding on my window, thought I was going to break it. He looked like the devil, triggered. So now I wonder, what is his frame? What is his narrative? I can't tell you why he reacted. I never knew this guy. I never had an interaction with this guy. I never did anything. I was scared for my life. He attempted to get in my car. He threw himself at my vehicle, pounding on my window, shaking. I don't know how he didn't break it. It's probably 250, 260, 70 pounds. It is the frame. It is the narrative. This is why we got to be careful of what frame we have, what narrative have, because you can do all the change you want, but if you're not changing the narrative, if you're not changing the frame, if you're looking at everything that you're a victim, you're going to frame everything through that. And so we got to be able to reframe. We got to be able to let things go. Everything we do or do not do is driven by belief system. A majority of our belief systems are in place by the time we're 5 years old. You see how we have to revisit these. We have to check in. We have to challenge them. We have to take a look at what we believe. Is it supporting us who we are today? We're not a 5-year-old kid anymore. We're not a 16-year-old girl. We're not a 22-year-old boy that this happened to. In transactional analysis, it's called life scripts. We create stories about our lives, what they have been and what they will be. This starts in childhood when we weave our perceptions of ourselves and of the world around us into a narrative about what we can and will do. These life scripts then continue to have a deep and unconscious effect on how we live our lives. They affect the decisions we make. They control what we think we could easily do and can never do. They shape our self-identity, and yet we seldom realize where they come from or even do not know they exist at all. Our life scripts are often encouraged and shaped by parents, family members whose life scripts were shaped by their parents, their environment, and so on. This is where the Bible says the sins of the father go 3 to 4 generations. This is what we're talking about. Our life scripts, our narratives, our map of reality, our frame is what we pass on. It's the structure of our reality. See, we all have these scripts, these programs. I don't function well without a lot of sleep. I'm not a morning person. I'm not emotional. I'm not really into this. Those are all called programs. And these programs have been playing for a while. For some of you, it might be a CD. It's only been playing a little while. For some of us, it might be some vinyl. It's a record player. I hate to date some of you. It could be an 8-track. And we've got to interrupt these programs because we are self-fulfilling creatures. If you tell yourself over and over and over, you don't speak well in public, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you tell yourself over and over and over, you need 8 hours of sleep to function right, then if you get anything less, you're going to find yourself not being able to function. Why? Because you are a self-fulfilling prophecy. You act as if. And this is why majority of our life is on autopilot. Even God says this, I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you, not to harm you, plans for hope in the future. And that's Jeremiah, I think, 29:11. Ephesians 2:10 says, for you are God's workmanship, masterpiece, created anew in advance for good works for you to walk through Jesus Christ. I mean, it's right there. That's where you make a decision, say, I am this. I am willing. Well, I'm now unwilling to continue to eat junk whenever I want and have a terrible body. So you see, it's deciding, I am going to be this today, and I am no longer going to be this. Because when you're playing big, life's going to knock you on your butt. And you can stay down and feel sorry for yourself, play the victim. Or you can rise up. You can pick yourself up, dust yourself off, and hit it again. And if you get knocked down again, you pick yourself up, you dust yourself off, you hit it again and again and again and again. You know what we call that? It's called courage. And Proverbs 24:16 says, a righteous man will stumble 7 times but get back up, but the wicked will stumble into ruin. The ultimate reframe up until now is about deciding you're no longer going to live in the past, that you're going to draw a line in the sand, that change happens now. If I do something different in the next moment, different than this moment, we call that change. It's a daily act of change. To continue on this path, you got to figure out, what are you willing to do? What are you unwilling to do? I'm unwilling to live beneath my potential. I'm unwilling to make poor decisions regarding my health. Then it becomes, now I am willing. In other words, I rise up to the new me, the new commitment, the new identity, the new behavior, create the new environment that allows for that to be fulfilled, fed, and fermented. To self-motivate is really important. It means to move to action. And since we establish that you and I are people, we understand no matter what we do for a living, we are all in the people business. So we need to know what moves people, because we're a people, we work with people, we move people, we sell to people, we buy from people. And one thing I learned about people a long time ago is we are emotional creatures. We're emotional creatures. Whenever we're dealing with human beings, we're dealing with two entities, the head and the heart. You're dealing with reason and intuition. You're dealing with reason and the ability to feel. You're dealing with the head and the heart. And so when you understand that even the brain is a sensory-based organ, that we have feelings, and those feelings were given to us for a reason, emotions. Look at the base of the word. It means to move. Emote is to move somebody. And so you got to understand the power of our emotions, the power of feelings. Feelings and emotions are great motivators. Pain is a great motivator. God gives us pain, dis-ease, that tells us, hey, take a look at things. Hey, there's something going on here that's not right. But what we do is we self-medicate. That's why you got to realize neuro-social conditioning. Neuro-social conditioning is a powerful set of techniques. Tony Robbins did a lot of work with this, and he basically used it as one of his primary drivers, and it's spot on. You know, my background is like Tony's, is in neuro-linguistic programming. And so you got to decide, are you unwilling to continue living this way? Are you willing to step out? What do you want so bad that you're willing to do whatever it takes? Focus is always the first decision. Before any of us can work toward any goals, we got to decide what they are. We got to define them. Many people spend their lives focusing on what they don't want. I don't want to be this. I don't want this. I don't want that. I know what you don't want, and you know what you don't want. But what do you want? And when you answer that question, you got to be specific. And it's really beyond it's just the money or the weight. What do those things bring you? Which brings us to step 2, leverage. To fully commit, We got to reprogram. Remember, we only use 3-5% of our brain consciously. The rest is still being used, but it's at the unconscious level. We are programmed creatures. Using neuroassociative programming, you'll associate massive pleasure with achieving your goals. This is another way to formulate what James Clear talked about in Atomic Habits. We've talked about this for the last couple of weeks. Ask quality questions. What will it cost me if I don't make this change? You see how it's stirring up emotion? What will it cost? In other words, what are you going to lose? Because really, neurosocial condition comes down to two pieces, the desire for pleasure and the avoidance of pain. Step three, interrupt. You got to scratch that CD. You got to break that LP. You got to pull on that 8-track. You mastered neurosocial conditioning, and you'll accept nothing short of achieving goals. Now it's time to examine your limiting beliefs. What's holding you back? You got to go to your stinking thinking. We have thoughts and behaviors that don't serve us, yet we carry them with us as a result of our upbringing. This is why I said you got to go back and revisit your belief systems. In wayofwarrior.training, that's one of the first things we do the first night is we take a look at your belief systems, because everything we do or do not do is driven by belief, and most of our beliefs have been placed in places that have been 4 or 5 years old. So once you interrupt the old program, now you got to create the new one. Associating pain with actions that aren't in line with your goals is only one part of associative conditioning. Remember, the two parts are avoiding pain and desiring pleasure. So now we got to have empowering alternatives. We got to prepare our environment. So to reach for a healthy snack instead of imagining, instead of a bad one, and then imagine, see the positive outcomes, create it, begin with the end in mind. What does it look like? What does it sound like? What does it feel like? Right? You've heard this before. Step five is conditioning. You got to condition yourself. The reward set in the brain, we're looking for pleasure. So condition your mind. There's reward molecules, things like a serotonin, dopamine. The molecules help to carve out a new pathway in your brain, one that associates your new habits with feelings. See, again, we're emotionally based. This is the key. And then step six, test it. This is a pattern. For me, I work with patterns all the time. You got to do it scientifically. There's a patterns flow chart. Number one, identify the pattern. Number two, ask yourself, is this pattern getting me what I want? Now, you know what's presupposed in there? You know what you want. And as I work with people, most people know far more what they don't want than what they do want. So you ask yourself this question, is this getting me what I want? If the answer is no, you got to change the pattern slightly. And then go back to step one and re-identify the pattern. And then again, ask yourself, is this getting me what I want? However, if you ask that question originally, if the answer is yes, lock it up. Make it SOP. It works. Run the pattern is the last process. Once you got a pattern, once you know it's getting what you want, then work the plan, run the pattern. And remember, any behavior reinforced with a positive outcome will repeat itself. So you want to prepare yourself. You want to create patterns around you that allow you the opportunity to change. And see, this is why addicts don't change. If you look at neurosocial conditioning, people have said, well, addicts don't change until they hit rock bottom. And then I always ask people, well, define rock bottom. And people have a hard time defining rock bottom. And I'll tell you what rock bottom is. Rock bottom is when the pain of staying the same becomes greater than the pain of changing. Then you will seek change. Treatment centers or forced confrontation, strict regimens are choices removed. Remember, there are many things that we have control over that we can change. Again, if nothing changes, then nothing changes. We got to realize we can change our state. And when I say we can change our state, I'm not talking about Texas to Oklahoma or Nevada to Arizona. We as human beings have different states of mind to be exact. One of my favorite teachers in the field of transactional analysis, Abe Wagner, used to say, you are 6 different people and so am I. You have 6 different personalities and so do your subordinates, your customers, your boss, your spouse, and your children. Right now, you are operating within one of those personalities and at any moment, you may activate another one instead. In transactional analysis, we call these things ego states. Eric Byrne is considered the father, the creator of transactional analysis. He was a psychologist in the 50s in Carmel, California. He saw patterns. That's what good psychiatrists do. I see patterns. He consistently noted that his patients would change over the course of a conversation. Sometimes the changes were verbal. Other times the changes could involve facial expressions, body language, posture, emotion, and many other nonverbal cues. Byrne tells a story that he treated a 35-year-old lawyer. And during the session, the lawyer, a male, said, I'm not really a lawyer. I'm just a little boy. But outside the confines of Dr. Byrne's office, this patient was a successful, hard-charging attorney. Later in the sessions, the lawyer would frequently ask Dr. Byrne if he was talking to the lawyer or the little boy. Byrne was intrigued by this, as he was seeing a single individual display two, quote, states of being. So Byrne began referring to these two states as adult and child. Later, Byrne identified a third state, one that seemed to represent what the patient had observed in his parents when he was small. Byrne referred to this as, quote, parent. As Byrne then later turned to his other patients, he began to observe that these three ego states were present in all of them. As Byrne gained confidence in his theory, he went on to introduce these in a 1957 paper, 1 year before he published his seminal paper, Introducing Transactional Analysis. And so Byrne ultimately defined the three ego states as parent, adult, and child. Now, these are fundamentally different than Freud's ego, id, and superego. Byrne described this best when he writes in Transactional Analysis and Psychotherapy. He says, quote, it will be demonstrated that parent, adult, and child are not concepts like superego, ego, or id, or the Jungian constructs, but phenomenological, what a great word, phenomenological realities. Stated another way, Freud's ego states are unobservable theoretical states. However, Byrne's three ego states can be confirmed with observable behaviors. States can be confirmed with observable behaviors. Other people can see them. Other people can hear them. Other people can feel them. And this leads to what I was talking about our state of mind. Our state of mind is the way we feel. Like the great Mounds Almond Joy commercial, remember that? Sometimes you feel like an ass, sometimes you don't. Well, let's be honest. Sometimes you're frisky, sometimes you're not. Sometimes you're playful, sometimes you're not. Sometimes you're in the mood, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Sometimes you are not. Sometimes you are happy, sad, angry, happy, charged up, depressed, unrelenting, weak, broken, helpless, hopeful, excited, charged up, ready for change, ready for bed. Get it? Our state of mind is how we feel. If you've ever had to create something, an article, a poem, a book review, whatever it is, and you sit down to write it and nothing's happening, you know what I'm talking about? You can't seem to get into it. Where other times, I don't know about you, but I sat down and in 10 minutes, one of the greatest poems I've ever written comes out of me. A flow of consciousness comes out of me where I write something that I train on for the next 15 years. And there was little or no forethought. So what was different? My state of mind. See, all experience, if I was to ask you right now to close your eyes and think of a memory, and I asked you to describe it to me, you could only use five descriptors. You could tell me what it looked like, what it sounded like, what it felt like, what it smelled like, and what it tasted like. All experience has five portals of entry. We have a sensory-based organ called the human brain. We codify all our experiences in the senses. What did we see? What did we hear? What did we feel? What did we smell? What did we taste? So think about it. We are creatures that process auditorily, visually, kinesthetically, olfactory, and gustatory. So we can use those to our advantage. What if you were to create a state of change? That's right. As you take a nice deep breath in through the nose, what is that smell in the air? Why, that is change. So let's create a state of mind, and let's call that state of mind openness to change. What are we creating by this state of change? Well, think about it. It's a positive feeling. You feel it? It's motivating. It's energizing. It's hopeful. Maybe there's some orange and some lemongrass and some yingling. Sweet, maybe a little cinnamon or some vanilla as the waft of the aroma fills your nose. What does that look like? What does that feel like as that smell stirs up your body? Do you feel that? What is that? Where is that at? Is that moving or swirling, vibrating or pulsing? Is that the sound of a swoosh or whirl? Is it humming or the low sound of vibration? What are those majestic colors, the colors of creation, bold blues and hues of gold, the deep yellows, purples, pastels? Now let us anchor that. A great anchor. Maybe pressing your hands closely together as you breathe in through the nose, or maybe the grip of a light pen, or maybe a coin in your pocket. See, you can change the way you feel. Your body is a machine. Your mind has certain patterns. And once you understand how you work, you can properly prepare yourself. And I'd much rather be prepared for a battle that does not take place as a warrior fighting my good fight than not be prepared for one that does. See, what I just did with you is I rushed you through a process called creating a state, where you can create whatever state of mind you want, a passion or freedom, focus or commitment or change. You can put yourself in any frame of mind you choose. My son, as a Christian, he's 23 years old. He's had most of his close friends who went through school with attend my training. Most everybody he grew up with has been through my training, all his friends, all his classmates. And one of the later ones who took my son up on his advice to attend my training was Henry. Henry was a good young man who wanted more to life. He knew that he had to change some things. He knew that if he was going to make something happen, he was going to have to make it happen. And he wanted more in life and decided eventually to take my son Christian's advice and attend wayofwarrior.training. And it changed his life forever. But don't take my word for it. Let's listen to what Henry says.
Hello, Mr. Black. I come to you today in joyous celebration. I've had a major milestone in my life with my promotion at work today. For the last 2 years, I have been working at becoming a cook and then a kitchen manager at In-N-Out, where I work. Cooking was a fight that taught me a lot of valuable lessons, and I wouldn't have been able to reach it without having taken the class in the August prior to beginning that journey. But then this last year, damn near to the day, I have been training to be in a position of leadership within In-N-Out. They actually hold leadership classes of their own for those that wish to get their what's called a level 7 promotion as a requirement. To get the promotion requires approval of the store manager, and then the district manager comes to watch and approve my shift running abilities. His goal is to hear me project and direct and influence the other associates around me. I've loved learning to do this because I knew I had an edge thanks to your class. It has been wonderful, and today I was passed off for my raise. I was told it was obvious I was motivated by excellence, and that my presence in the kitchen made a difference. I put my heart, body, and soul into this as much as I ever put it into anything. Ever since I was told what the day was going to be, that I was going to be watched, I've envisioned exactly what it would feel, smell, taste, and look like. And almost perfectly, it came to fruition. Now I'm afforded the opportunity to be grateful, which is my favorite stage of success. And without a doubt, I wouldn't have made it here without your kindness and influence in my life. I've achieved exactly what I want. I'm exactly where I want to be. So thank you, thank you, thank you. God has blessed me through you today.
You see, change starts with us. Quit running around wanting to change everybody else, and the only person we can change is ourselves. It reminds me of a story about a Chinese general. He had a noble cause. This Chinese general wanted to save the world. As he sat down to figure out how he's going to change the world, he realized he had to first start with his country since he had authority in his country. As he sat down to figure out how he's going to change his country, he realized he had to first start with his community, since he and his family resided in that community. As he sat down to figure out how he's going to change his community, he realized he had to first start with his family, since they were pillars of said community. As he sat down to figure out how he was going to change his family, he came to the dawning realization that the only person he could change was himself. And as he changed himself, that change would affect change his family. And the change in the family would affect change in his community. And the change in his community would affect change in his country. And that just might change the world. Who are you running around wanting to change? Where the only person we could truly change is ourselves. And when we change ourselves, that change is immediately possible. It could be happening in a moment. Life's changing in a moment. Trust me, if you came home and found out your child was looking at porn or something like that or being molested, your life would change forever. In my training, in 48 hours, people's lives change forever. But let's be honest, there are many people in life whose lives would change forever in a moment, and most of it in a negative way. See, most people waste their life wanting to change the world. In the process, they themselves change to fit into the world. They actually become more like the world instead of changing the world. I can't control what happens in an election. I can't control what happens with the economy. I can't control that. But what I can control is myself. You know, I've been blessed because what I do, I've been doing for over 31 years. And I've been helping people maximize the potentials they were created for. Again, you go to wayofwarrior.training and read about it. Let me tell you, I know that the biggest changes I've made in this world are me. But I also know this. That change has caused many others to change. You know, my daughter, Faith, I'm very proud of her. She's 26, maybe 27. She got her master's degree from the time she got out of high school and got her master's degree, college degree, everything, 4 years. Her husband's a doctor. I'm very proud of my daughter. My daughter's a bigwig with Mary Kay. She's worked hard. And what she does is weekly she highlights certain people. And 2 weeks ago, I was reading her little highlight on a person. And it was about this woman named Mindy Cole. As a matter of fact, I'll read it to you. It said, today, on my Changemaker portfolio is the lovely Mindy Woods Colvin. She goes on to say, I've known Mindy for most of my life. Why? Because Mindy was one of my master trainers. Mindy left my employ right before my daughter turned 15 and was getting ready to go to teen class. And so I haven't talked to Mindy probably in depth for probably 10 years. And she said, she has a little segment, so she says advice. So she asked Mindy, what is your advice that you would give to people? And here's what Mindy wrote. More than 20 years ago, I received a tremendous gift of attending a leadership training that changed my life. I actually went to work for the company for several years, and the things I learned during those often challenging years will stay with me forever. One of my favorite elements from that experience is understanding the immense power that I have in shaping my life by being intentional about my thinking. I'm not always 100% on point, but that knowledge is a foundational element in every part of my life. I'm busy. I don't always handle stress the healthiest way. I sure do love to nibble. And it's very easy for me to feel overwhelmed. And yet I know I'm never powerless. I get to decide how I feel, what I do, and how I define success. And never, ever am I willing to play the victim. I refuse to give that much power to anyone else because God created me in His image. So why would I allow another human being to define me or my value? I will say that taking my thoughts captive is not always easy, but is always worth it. Touched my heart when I read that because I've been changing lives for 31 years. But let me tell you, the biggest life I've changed is mine. And the biggest impact I've had is the effect that people who have walked with me, who've seen me, who've seen my life change. Many people want to change their marriage. They want to change their lot in life. They want to change their social standing. They want to change their weight, their health. There are three things we all need to change and be constantly working on. The three things all people need to constantly be changing and working on is our minds, our hearts, and our attitudes. And in order to do that properly, you gotta know how we work. So from the psychological point of view, there are six levels that human beings work with most often. From the bottom up, I'm going from the bottom up, it's environment, it's behavior, it's capabilities, it's beliefs / values, it's identity, and it's spirit. So the basic level at the bottom is your environment, your external constraints. You operate on that environment through your behavior. Your behavior is guided by your mental maps and your strategies, which then define your capabilities. These capabilities are organized by belief systems and values. These belief systems and values are organized by our identity. Our identity derives its essential meaning from spirit. In other words, why are we here? And whenever you work with logical levels, you got to understand a couple things. Number one, it's easier to change things at the bottom versus top. In other words, it's a lot easier to change what you do, behavior, second one from the bottom, than it is to change your identity, second one from the top, right? It's easier to change things on the bottom versus top. Change takes place from the top down, not the bottom up. Mom and dad should change if they expect the kids to change. The leader should change by example and lead other people into change. Leadership's an example. They're role models. Change takes place from the top down, not the bottom up. You can't change an issue at the same level it was created at. You got to go to the level above it. Remember Einstein said the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results? Well, he also said you cannot solve a problem at the same level it was created at. I never knew what that meant until I met the logical level. So in essence, let's say I have a problem with my capabilities. Let's just think, I just don't think I'm capable to do A, B, or C, whatever it is. Well, what do I deal with? Well, I got to go things above it, my beliefs, values. I got to take a look at my beliefs about myself. Now, not necessarily about my identity, not necessarily who I am, but my beliefs about what I'm capable of. How good am I? What is my fruit? And here's the key. You know, for the longest time, it was only identity. But even people in NLP who don't believe in a personal God, because how do you quantify that? They know that there's something above us. And so when I say spirit, I don't mean a personal God. Some of you don't believe in a personal God. That's your choice. However, it does mean it has to be something above us. And why does that matter? Because of Einstein's quote, that you can never solve a problem the same level it was created at. So if man's the problem, man's always the problem. Unless you have a level above man, something beyond man, you can't solve the problem of man. And I'm going to tell you right now, in 32 years of working with people and in my own life, I'm going to tell you right now, we all think the problem's out there. The problem's not out there. It's in here. Just look inside, because that's the one thing that we have absolute control over. So think about this. There's a rule. It says you criticize the behavior, not the person. Why? Because how much easier to change behavior than person? you got to be careful that you can't attach people's behavior to their identity. I use the example all the time. If your child lies to you, you can't call your child a liar, because what you just did is you took a behavior and you attached it to their identity. And that child believes it is a liar, then what do you think it's going to do the rest of its life? It's going to lie. If that child believes it's a mistake or it's a waste of life, how do you think that child's going to act? If you keep calling that child stupid because they do something, you take a behavior and attach it to their identity, they're going to think they can't learn. So you got to understand how people work. You want to build up people and have them take a look at their behavior. And so it's very important, as you're building people up, when you want to compliment them, you can still compliment the behavior. Then you just tell what it means about them as a person. So, hey, let me use the example of lies. So let me use the negative example first. So if I told my son, Christian, you lied to me, you're better than that. It's not acceptable. That's a totally different thing than saying, Christian, you're a liar. See, when I say you're a liar, it might feel better, but I just attach the behavior to his identity. But if I told him, Christian, you just lied to me, that's not acceptable. You're better than that. That's a totally different message, one that he's going to remember a different way of the unconscious mind. And so conversely, when you're building someone up, you want to build up their identity, because behavior comes and goes, but identity is who you are. So let me give an example. You build the identity, not the behavior. Bob, you're always early at every morning and at work. It's refreshing to your level of commitment. You're always early. You're prepared. You participate. It shows your dedication to the team and being a good team player. This is a great quality, one that adds much to our team. You see how I took Bob's activity and I used it to build him up? How about Lisa? Lisa, your reports are always on time and they are neatly prepared. Why that matters so much is because it says a lot about you as a person, as a team member, as a leader. You have pride in your work by doing such clean and clear reports, and it shows your value and pride that you place in yourself and in your work. We need more people like you. See, you got to be able to take it and practice with the stuff. Fred, your handling of that customer complaint the other day was incredible. It shows, notice how I'm taking a behavior and attaching it to their identity. It shows your care for our team and for our customers. You are a dedicated team member who knows that people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. You see, this is understanding how we work. It's about being able to motivate ourselves and motivating other people. We're working to create the best version of ourselves. That's what being under construction is about. That's why we change. We're not changing for the sake of changing. We want to be better spouses, better parents, better partners, better forces of change in this world, better followers of God, whatever roles you play in life. And part of that process as we grow is creating some goals, some benchmarks, measure our success. Because once success is, it's a habit. And once you start getting some confidence, you're going to take bigger jumps and bigger chances. And so you got to understand that there are six elements of a well-formed outcome. As you start creating goals to cement this change and start living your life different as a different person, you got to know there are six elements of a well-formed outcome. That means six pieces need to be in place for you to properly set a goal. And why does that matter? Because if you properly set these goals, you are increasing the potentiality, the probability, the possibility of you accomplishing it. There's six elements. Number one, state your goal positively. State what you want, what you do not want. State it positively. What do I want? What's the outcome I want? Number two, put your goal in context. When, where, with whom do you want this outcome? What you see, hear, and feel inside as you consider this will create emotion. When do you want this? With whom do you want this? In every relationship, every situation. Number three, express your goals specific sensory terms. Again, you've got to begin with the end in mind. You got to make it real. Things that we can see are real. Things that we can hear are real. Things that we can touch are real. So as Covey said, begin with the end in mind. You've got to project yourself in the future and then use your mind. Create it. What does you accomplish in that goal look like? What does you accomplish in that goal sound like? What does it feel like? This is how your mind works. We store things in the five senses. So if you're going to create something, you've got to make it sensory specific so it becomes real. You've got to make these goals real. Once they're real, you'll live for them. You'll die for them. You'll rearrange things for them. But if they're not real, you won't do any of that. Number four, evaluate honestly the effects of achieving your goals. Will you lose anything that you now have and want to keep by achieving this goal? And what this means is think about your goal in the bigger picture. Because there could be some invisible cons that you don't know about. Are you sure you really want this? What impact will achieving this have on the rest of your life? What will happen if you do not accomplish this goal? Number five, and this is so important. I hate this number five. It should be sooner. Choose a worthwhile goal. Your goal should feel worthwhile to you. It doesn't matter if it is to others or not, but you need to be emotionally involved. There are three steps to becoming your dreams. Want it, create it, live it. And want it's always about desire. And I tell people, don't approach the throne of your goals without desire. You got to be emotionally involved. And then number six, choose a goal that you can fulfill yourself. So many people set goals that are dependent on other people. And even though we have to, we're mandated in corporate settings, it doesn't work because you can't control another person. You can only control yourself. That's what number six really is. Can I take charge of the changes required? Does it depend on me? Do I need others? How can I do it? You see, when we live our lives like it matters, it does. We become a self-fulfilling prophecy. Needs nobody else. You act as if. This is the key. Are you willing? And you got to realize everybody's working perfectly. I didn't say you were perfect. There was only one perfect. But I'm telling you right now, you and me are both perfect. We are getting exactly the results we have programmed ourselves to get. This is why we got to know how the human creature works. We got to know how the conscious mind works, how the unconscious mind, because if you're going to make any lasting change, you must follow the rules of the unconscious brain. This is why neurosocial conditioning matters. This is why the six elements of a well-formed outcome matters. This is why the logical levels matter, because it's how you do your life. It's the programming. It's a universal law. Follow the fruit to the root. So I'm going to give you an example of these because I've given the six elements of well-formed outcome. But I always ask people to ask me some examples. Give me some specific examples. How do I apply that? So I want to do that for you. I want to share with you now this client of mine. What this person did, they personalized the six elements of a well-formed outcome. Now, I'm going to keep this person's name a generic. You won't know who this person is or my association with this person. I don't want anything close where you can figure out who this person is. But this is very important for you to hear. And see, I do a lot of life counseling work. I had this woman I was counseling. She was in a traumatic situation, and she was struggling. There was a lack of forgiveness I'd realized going on. You see, she had made a mistake. She got pregnant at a very young age, and nobody knew except her and the baby's daddy. Mom and dad didn't know. Nobody knew. Her school didn't know. She was still in school, I think 16 years old. Huge, bright future, straight-A student, had everything in front of her, did not want to ruin her life by with his child. And again, I'm not putting any value. I'm just telling you what was going on. The problem was she had become forever traumatized. So here's what she did. I'm going to read to you generically, so I'm going to take any proper names out, how she took what she was going through and used the six elements of well-formed outcome. So number one, state your goal positively. I want to once again accept my position as a child of God. I want to live with a deeper sense of purpose. I want to metaphorically grab a river tube and be on top of the water as opposed to continually shoving myself underneath. I'm being positive now. But I know I have to also explain what I mean. I want God to be my river tube. I want to accept his love and forgiveness. I want to be alive and present for my loved ones again. Number two, put your goal in context. When? Now. I need it now, too. The leadership class was my first step that you gave me, unknowingly. And now that I took the first step, I felt a small sense of forgiveness, belonging, purpose, and light inside myself. I want to make more steps. So yes, I would like to achieve this goal now. Of course, I know the goal cannot be achieved instantly, but what I mean is consistent steps from now until forever. Where do I want this? I don't think my goal has a physical location. It's more of an internal thing. I want my goal to take place inside me, in my mind, my body, my soul. With whom do I want this? First and foremost, I want this with myself. And then also with my partner, because the decision was mine, but it impacted us. And it's not just a scar in my life, but his as well. I also want this with my parents, especially my sister. I have a younger sister. She's 18 right now, actually. I want to use my pain and my mistakes and be able to give her better advice, be more understanding. And overall, as I reach my goal, I will just be better to those I love. My outcome is to accept myself as a child of God, to accept that I have a deeper purpose, to hold on to my river tube and use those things to help me do and be better for the people I love and for the people God puts in my life now. Number three, express your goals specific sensory-based terms. These are all specific to personal experiences. If they seem basic, I promise they are not. They are all from my heart. She goes on to say, I hear the hymns they play at church and I'm standing and singing. I'm not crying this time because I feel like I belong. not belong at church, but I once again belong to God, regardless of any past or future sins. I smell old people and hear the congregation's voices. I feel my hands on the pew and see my family there with me. I see the night sky when I get home super late and feel happy to be alive, even with all the new persistent problems and struggles. I smell the night air and feel grateful to experience that moment. I see myself in the mirror and I feel forgiveness. I see myself as a whole person and not just one big mistake, one big failure. Number four, evaluate the effects of achieving your goals. I will lose the comfortable blanket of sadness that I love to hide under up until now. I secretly want to keep that sadness because sometimes life is easier when we're sad. But I'm prepared to work and let it go. The blanket of sadness is the biggest pro, but also con, that would come from achieving my goal. It partially does hold my feet down from wanting to take the next step because I'm so used to living life while feeling extremely depressed that I almost don't know how my life would look like without the incessant sadness. I think life in general actually becomes harder once you work past a wall and past a trauma. Another con is that if I told my story to a person and they did not handle the information well, it could backfire on me. Number five, choose a goal that I can fulfill myself. I think my goal is already in my own control. Aside from the help I'm getting from Mr. Black, I'm already well aware that no one else can change my own attitude and ways of thinking except me. I've already taken charge of some of the changes required. It entirely depends on me. I can do this. I will do this. I've already begun the process, and I feel so much better with myself and God and everything in my brain. My mistakes are all still there, and they will never be gone, but I'm able to recognize them as past mistakes and ways I can grow, not as really heavy bricks that hold me down. My goal that I can fulfill myself is I will leave my mistake of having an abortion and all the mistakes that followed in the past where they belong, but I will not try to forget or ignore them anymore. I will acknowledge them and finally cut the ropes that tie me to them and finally put focus on God, and I will try and rebuild the relationship there that I voluntarily tore down, and I will continue to love myself every day, even though it will and already has been a struggle. I will one day love myself and see myself the way God sees me. And lastly, number six, choose a worthwhile goal. Positive consequence of my goal, I will go to church and not feel like a demon sitting in the pews. Ha! I will stop mentally and physically abusing myself as a means of punishing myself for what I did. The physical harm has lessened greatly since I began this journey of forgiveness only 2 weeks ago, which is good. It has already been a positive consequence of this goal and journey. I will reignite the fire I have for school. I love school. I really do. My mistake is not the only thing that pushes me, but what it does is it pushes me negatively and harshly, and I want to stop using that specific mistake as a means of motivation, because up until now, I would just feel like a spiritual failure and a failure of a person, but not in school. So I put all my effort into school so I could at least be a success there. But I want to revert back to my original love for learning in general. I will laugh and smile and have fun and actually believe that I deserve to feel those things. Wow. Touched my soul. See, when you know how we work, when you know who you are, when you know why you're here, and then you have a great warrior walking beside you, then you can create whatever life you want. And you can fight your good fight. Now that we know the technology, now that we know the science, we know how to make change, and we know Mr. Black can help you change, now it's time to ask a couple of important questions. And I know you're asking me right now, how do I find out about that incredible life-altering training you do? Well, that's wayofwarrior.training. But that's not the questions you need to ask yourself. The questions we need to ask ourselves this week, do I want to change? What do I want to change? And why do I want to change? Thank you so much for joining me today. Please like this show and subscribe to get more great content like this. Also, I'd love to hear from you, so please leave me a review. If you would like more information or you would like to connect with me, please visit wayofwarrior.training. That's wayofwarrior.training. Until next time, remember, when you live your life like it matters, it does.